This week's episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by you. That's right, we're on Patreon now, so head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. For as little as $5 a month, you can help our show and get all kinds of great extra content on top of that. We've got a ton of great bonus content waiting for you right now, so head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons today.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, a crappy club for jerks. I'm your host, Bob Steinhoist Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and those egg cancel creeps got to me, too.
Who else?
Sacred Parchment, Chris Antista.
And special guest...
I'm Kat Bailey, and after 5 years, I still think I'm a chicken. I'm a chicken, Bob.
I know, Kat, I know. Yes, so Kat is back after popular demand, and today's episode is Homer the Great.
There's a secret meeting place.
Yes, let's go inside.
Sounds good.
And today's episode aired on January 8th, 1995, the first episode of 1995. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Oh boy, Bobby, take out those dicks, because Tech War debuts on USA.
Oh my God.
Dumb and Dumber tops the box office. Michael Jackson puts to bed allegations of illicit sexual activities with children by appearing on TV alone. And there are officially over 6 million people on the line with an internet connection. All of them in Simpsons message boards.
Alt.tv.simpsons. That's right. We're going to get big into Simpsons message boards in this episode.
Sure. Yeah. And I mean, my Catholic school kept Tech War from me, so I never learned about it. I don't know about you guys.
He's got to learn about Tech War sometime.
I meant to write a better intro. I don't know why I said a thing about the dicks.
But Shatner did not actually write Tech War, right? It was just a name to paste on a book.
I looked to Kat for this information.
Yes. Come on, Kat. You know.
William Shatner had many books ghostwritten for him, including numerous Star Trek novels. Mm-hmm. He had an entire arc of Star Trek novels in which he comes back to life.
Right. And wasn't he like a ghost in Spock's brain or something?
He wasn't a ghost. He gets revived by an alliance between the Borg and the Romulans in a book called The Return.
As a spirit?
No. Like, he literally gets brought back to life with, like, nanites or something like that.
So they dug him up from that pile of rocks he got dug.
What a terrible way for his character to go out. And I would apologize, but this will probably not be the last time we talk about Star Trek on this episode. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, the internet is for nerds talking about Star Trek, but I'm getting ahead of ourselves to the next episode.
I didn't use it for that. I used it for The Simpsons. I did. But only 6 million people.
Yeah,
we're online
in
1995.
And they're all college students, I bet.
Probably.
Or the children of college students.
And if you look at, like, who's responsible for this internet? Well, AOL's pretty big, but Prodigy and CompuServe are nipping at their heels. Mm-hmm. And, like, wow.
Tech War, I watched the Tech War TV show, like, one episode of it. And I also remember on the John Henson Talk Soup, he interviewed him about Tech War once, but not really. It was a great joke about John Henson's interview show, and then it was a typo. Instead of starring, it was staring John Henson, and then he is just staring silently at Kirk the entire time.
Was it a Space Ghost thing, or was Shatner really there?
They were in the same room.
Okay.
I'm sorry I brought up Tech War, but the only reason, because it's a 2-season show on the USA Network, but I only did it because it'll help you get a Simpsons reference later on.
Yes. Yeah.
It will.
That, I get that confused, actually. What was the Kevin Sorbo show?
And Kevin Sorbo's Andromeda? Unbelievable.
Hercules, The Legend Continues?
Well, no. I meant the Star Trek adjacent Kevin Sorbo show. That was Andromeda.
Now he starts in direct-to-DVD Jesus movies.
Yeah.
So that's how his career
him
turned out.
Him and Dean Cain, that's where they all end up.
The super hunks are now on DVD.
I think I saw him complaining about SJWs online,
He would.
Get old enough, everyone does.
But I want to talk...
So was William Shatner.
Yep.
Yes. Oh, God. So today's episode is Homer the Great, and this is all about the Stonecutters, which kind of have a real-life corollary. The Freemasons. Yes.
Oh, that's who you... That's yes. You're pinning it on?
Definitely.
A Mason is a Stonecutter.
Yes, a Mason is a Stonecutter.
But I dug very lightly into the Skull and Bones organization.
It's a little Skull and Bones.
Yeah, I mean, Bush is in the episode, of course, but it's really just... So the Masons were one of the first modern trade unions, and they had a lot of, like, you know, oaths and creeds and secret handshakes, which made people think about conspiracies about them. You know, Freemasons run the country, as we saw in that one episode with Burns. Mm-hmm. But really, it was a bunch of laborers who got together to drink. just like the Stonecutters. There was nothing sacred about it. Just like all these rituals, but all they were doing was drinking and hanging out.
I can't tell if I want to go back to those times, but I grew up near an Elks Lodge, and it's there were two of them in my town, and it's since been bulldozed, but organizations where only men went to go drink.
Yes, yes.
Like, but it was lavish. A huge pool, a slide, a high dive. Kids could go there on the weekends, but this was, but at night, all men, baby. Like, is that something I'd want to do?
I mean, that's what World War II vets needed to, like, get through their problems.
Yes. Yeah, were they going there and crying?
To medicate your PTSD with alcohol away from your family and then drive home drunk.
I you know it from the Flintstones, but that Flintstones comic is one of my most recommended things of this year, and they go to that Buffalo
Order. The Sacred Order of the Water Buffalo.
Yeah. To deal with their war trauma directly, and it's such a hilarious... I love that comic.
That recent DC comic is very, very good. Yeah, the Freemasons thing...
Fred and Bonnie killed all the tree people to take their land.
I heard a million conspiracy theories growing up, like this... Definitely the Merkin seasons show that he is interested in conspiracy theories. Like, Bart just had a time of going through conspiracy theories in Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy. And the Freemasons are an easy target for conspiracies, also because, like, the Founding Fathers were Masons. Like, some of them were, anyway. George Washington and Ben Franklin among them. Also, it's a very UK fear of the Masons, too. There they think, oh, the ruling class in Parliament is, they're all secretly Masons. Or the murders by Jack the Ripper or the killing of JFK, those were Freemason plots. But when you dig a little deeper in a lot of them, they then say, well... And it's because the Freemasons are the cover for the Illuminati, who are the cover for what? The Jews. The Jews who control, like, when you
the
dig
lizard
in,
people.
Even the lizard people, it's just like, but it's the Jews is really ultimately where it comes in there, and a lot of conspiracy theories.
Man, I had never heard of this, and we were running around a suburb stealing beer from, like, refrigerators and garages, and garages that were closed, we were spray painting dicks and butts on. And then a guy I didn't know, he's like, your turn. He gets out and he just spray paints, fuck the Masons. And we're like 16 and like, what does that mean? And watching a dumb, drunk 16-year-old try and explain the Masons, like, I'll never believe anything about this organization again. And to hear it out of an adult's mouth baffles me.
Yeah.
Not what you're saying.
Well, meanwhile, with the Skull and Bones, like, that is the club in Harvard that everybody's
Yale.
A member of. And
it's
Yale, not Harvard.
Right. Because Bush is in there.
Right.
Well, both
Bush
and
Kerry.
And Kerry, and it was rumored that, you know, get you elected to Senate or president.
He did have the boorish manners of a Yalie, that George H.W. Bush.
Harvard had its own club, I believe.
I was trying to... The Whiff and Poops.
I could be
they're
wrong.
All the
it could be just a... It could just be an Ivy League thing.
Where's my organization to escape women with a bunch of straight men?
I associate this with less with Skull and Bones and more with the Illuminati, which everybody always goes, oh, the Illuminati, yeah, those people who built the Denver airport. But actually, the Illuminati was the alternative to the Masons because the Masons were too expensive.
I see.
So they had their own rituals and their own things, but they were actually cracked down upon by the Bavarian government and went away. And since then, there have been various groups that say they're the Illuminati, but people always go, ah, the Illuminati. They're the real power behind the one world, the push toward the new world order.
I thought Jay-Z and Beyonce were the Illuminati. I thought they were the kings of it.
But then they united to become the deep state.
If you ever want to see all of these conspiracy theories come together, read the books Left Behind.
Oh, God.
Which is basically where a lot of that stuff go home to roost, such as the John Birch Society.
I've seen the movies, 1, 2, and Tribulation. Force. Those movies are hilarious.
Have you seen the Nick Cage ones?
That is the funniest fucking cover I've ever seen in my life. Everything you think about Nick Cage is embodied on that Left Behind cover.
Meanwhile, with Skull and Bones, I learned everything about it from the film The Skull, starring Joshua Jackson.
I'm sure it was all documentary. Yes. It all really happened in real time.
But we are in the trilogy of, I think, my favorite three episodes from a season, period.
Yeah, like this is the start of it in the next two. Yeah.
Into Bart the Comet, Bart's Comet. Like,
I love Bart's
Comet. This entire season's been incredible.
Yep,
I bought it on Amazon, and I was just going, yes, 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 yes. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like every episode is solid gold.
Except the clip show, which doesn't count.
Except the clip show.
Everybody can just mentally erase the clip show.
But again, we're sort of kids at this point, so a lot of this stuff, like, oh, nostalgia for 3 years ago, an astrological event, and an Illuminati organization. Simpsons gave me my context for that. Mm-hmm. Like, no other show had dealt with these this subject matter that
I love this episode as a fantasy about what a secret society really is, of just like a secret society that makes everything easier, and that when you, it'll give you all the answers too. They'll hand you a book that says secret world history. You're like, ah, finally I have all the truth. Now I know it, that I'm in this secret club. And actually, you'll never find out the truth, but even being in the Masons probably doesn't give you the answers you're searching for in this confusing world. But anyway, let's start with a stern lecture from Stern Lecture Prominent.
They should have called Surly Joe. Where was he?
It looks like you got a leak.
Could you start fixing it pretty soon? The basement is getting awfully flooded, and I think the cat's down there.
Yeah, I probably won't be able to get the parts I need for 2-3 weeks, and that's if I order them today, which I won't.
Oh, dear.
Low battery. Blowing up.
Emergency call. Gotta go.
What should we do until you get back?
Put a pan down there.
He floats a pan.
Oh, it didn't work.
So this scene has one of my all-time favorite visual callbacks in the Simpsons episode, which is always, of course, the big ugly head.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Extopalaba kettle.
Half
you
flooded.
Remembered it first. You got it.
I can't spell it, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, it was. It's always great to see him down in the basement when they remember to put it there. But that, like, it's waist-deep water. It's destroying their fixed foundation. That foundation's gone now, man. And that this... Yeah, I just love his way of going, like, which I won't. I love the distrust of a plumber that comes from being a homeowner. That, like, you could do this. I bet you could fix this. You're just lying
to me.
It
feels like working with a mechanic, too, where they're keeping information from you and talking about ordering parts and things like that. I associate this more with mechanics, but I don't drive anymore, so fuck them.
Yeah. And I rent, so I'll never have to talk to a plumber. It's great.
Yeah. And there's that kind of little jab at unionized people being like, just kind of milking this for as much money as I possibly can.
Gotta go.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, it's one thing I don't like on The Simpsons in these early seasons is when they make fun, like, unions just let people be lazy. Like, I feel I'm more pro-union than this. I'm not so against.
But it turns out that he's in another different kind of secret society other than the unions.
That's right. He's got a t-shirt to prove it, too. So this entire day is basically just Homer Simpson's worst day ever. He gets stuck in traffic because Arnie Pie crashed on the freeway.
Yeah, it was a great return to Arnie
dead.
Pie.
That's right.
True. He should have died on that mountain in Mr. Plow.
I can't be killed.
Tell him I love him. Okay.
Well, apparently he's accident prone because he crashed in the middle of the freeway as well.
The only thing that's funny about Arnie is accidents happening to him. If he's just in his first appearance, they got through the one joke they have with him, and just like Arnie Pie with Arnie in the sky instead of Pie in the sky. So once they've done that one joke, what more do you do with him other than cause him physical danger?
Pretty much. I just realized this is one of two episodes in a row with a helicopter crash.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
Oh, wait. No.
No,
this
it's
is
both in this episode.
There's two in this episode. Wow, so this episode is bookended by helicopter crashes.
Man, that budget must have been huge.
Well, that's why they had a bottle episode in the next one.
We get one major continuity-breaking moment. I'm sure Henry was
apoplectic
with
little.
Rage.
I'm saving that for the next episode.
Yes, where Homer's parking spot is basically in the backyard.
Yes.
The plant is not there.
The Simpsons' backyard is the parking lot to the plant has never been true before or since.
And Matt Groening shudders during the commentary at that joke. He shudders like Sideshow Bob.
Well, Bart is way off model. When Bart is waving hi, Dad, he looks terrible.
And I think it's mostly the continuity issue that Matt Groening hates. He's like, it's a funny joke,
it's
I know,
a good joke.
But
it's
like
a good joke.
This
it's
will never
joke.
Happen again.
And like the case of the video game, I'm always reminded of Simpsons Hit and Run because you eventually unlock a stonecutter shortcut. In Simpsons, is it Hit and Run?
It's Hit and Run, yeah.
Yeah, the GTA clone.
You drive through that nice cave with all the
with the chandeliers from this episode, and I love that this episode is so important. It makes it into like everything Simpsons because it does suggest an underground cult that controls everything in Springfield.
It's pretty great.
And they definitely didn't have the plant in their backyard there, and they definitely didn't have the plant there in the movie because that's the woods.
I don't want to go too deep into canon, but I can often forgive whether or not if it goes against canon or whatever, in this case, if it's a good visual gag, because frankly, I mean, a lot of The Simpsons just doesn't freaking make sense.
Yeah.
Where's Springfield?
It's fine. It's fine. And the movie suggests they live on the edge of Springfield. They're like the last house there.
And that it's a circular town you can put a bubble over.
Trappuccino.
And that the church is next to Moe's Tavern that one time for the joke. Like, so yes, They always mess with the geography. It doesn't really matter. And it is a very funny joke that Homer seemingly spent 2 hours in traffic to then, what if he could have just walked through the gate in his backyard and walked to work, it would have been the same amount.
Hey, like, another layer to that joke.
You just say,
there was barbed wire there, man.
Yes. No, I know. You just know that Burns is like, I'm not letting this person walk to work. He has to drive here in his car.
So far, Homer was stuck in traffic, got a bad parking spot, and his EconoSave stool breaks.
Yes.
And he adds it to his revenge list. It's not that funny of a list, but I noted one interesting reference. He, on his revenge list, is the H2O water slide, which he got stuck in season two.
It was a weird continuity. I feel I would credit more to animators than the...
Yeah, who wrote the episode?
This episode was written by John Swartzwelder, handed to him by Merkin. Merkin wanted desperately to write this. This is really his baby, but he was too busy. He just could not write. He only had one episode with his writing credit on it, which is Deep Space Homer.
What about The Joy of Sex?
All right, fine. But that's in the future.
It's also about a cult, though.
Yeah, he loves him some cults. That's how he snuck a Scientology episode past Nancy Cartwright. He was able to do it. Joy of Sect is like half making fun of Scientology. Really, the opening is the more Scientology.
That is true. That is true. But
I really want to know is, what is Homer's vendetta against Billy Crystal?
I mean, he's a bad guy. He sucks.
At this point, probably forget Paris.
Yeah. Well, I would say about this Billy Crystal in the book. In the book by Thomas Lennon and Robert Ben Grant, who have done a million things, but it's their book on how to write a script and how to write a movie script. They also tell stories about their life, like, oh, here's the time we met Jackie Chan and he was super awesome. Here's the time we had a meeting with Lindsay Lohan. And they're like, well, if you're asking us for, like, who was the worst person we ever met, like, it is Billy Crystal. Like, they're like, wow, okay. So this is a Hollywood fact that Billy Crystal
sucks. And Mary Tyler Moore, okay.
Uh-huh.
I still, at least, you know, Mary Tyler Moore has an alcohol problem. I don't know if Billy Crystal does. So
he's got a blackface problem.
I was going to say, he did that way too recently.
Yeah. At a tribute to Katrina, he was like, well, they want me to do my jazz band.
You're a Chocolate City tribute, man.
It's time to break this out.
Also on there was Solo Flex and The Boy and the Emmys.
Thank
and
God.
Luxury.
Like that awful workout machine they would advertise on Nickelodeon as if an 8-year-old watching Danger Mouse wants to get ripped.
For
Blaster
the
quads.
Yeah. And that was all based on a series of idiotic rubber bands. That's what Solo Flexes were. Instead of weights, they used bands that would contracted, which means you're doing a workout. It snaps back on you like a fucking mousetrap, and your weights wear out.
Yeah, I guess it was just an ad for sad dads unemployed at home with their kids.
Oh, they infuriated me. Yeah. It was all over Nickelodeon.
I never liked seeing those. Though there was a great Solo Flex joke, it was Bowflex on
Principal.
The Husky Bobby episode of
King
of the Hill.
Yes, and Peggy making fun of Hank.
I'll use it 3 times a day.
This entire sequence of events that is happening to Homer really is emblematic of how well-constructed this episode is.
Uh-huh.
It gets off to an extremely quick start.
Yeah.
I don't feel like there's a single wasted second in this entire episode.
And that this opening will be reflected in the second act opening, too. This is structurally a very strong episode. We talked about how the one before this, Fear of Flying, structurally pretty weak, that it has like a 10-minute opening that has nothing to do with Marge, and then it's kind of uninterested in it's a weak episode in that way. This one doesn't need a B plot. It is just strong the whole way through. And so Homer's having it bad, but then he gets to see that Lenny and Carl are having it pretty sweet. But why?
Hey, how come you guys got such great parking places?
It's a secret.
Shut up.
Hey, you guys help me fix my... Hey, how come you guys got better chairs than me?
It's a secret.
Shut up.
Hey, you guys want to go bowling tonight?
Nah, we're busy.
Yeah, we got things to do.
Like what?
It's a secret.
Shut up.
Carl was drinking, so he couldn't tell Lenny to shut up.
That's very helpful.
Yeah. I love that Homer's just like, well, I got to tell him to shut up.
I think of that reading of shut up a lot in my head.
Shut up. And that it's funny that Homer all these obvious tells that they're in a cult or a club is right there, and Homer only notices them that day.
This could be the first viewing of the contentious relationship between Lenny and Carl, who apparently live together in this episode.
That's true.
They leave from the same house in the same car, and there's no car parked outside.
Well, I think it's more that Carl came to Lenny's house. Lenny.
True.
Well, we've been to Lenny's house before for the poker night.
Shave up, stupid.
So here's my headcanon. There's a ton of drinking going on at the Stonecutters, and one of them has to volunteer to be the designated driver so the other can drink.
Well, they can drive drunk all they want.
You drunk driving when you got that sticker, baby.
Yeah.
It's true, yeah.
Also, these three episodes, Fear Flying This and Maggie Makes Three, all are the rise of Lenny and Carl to regulars on the show. Like, they've been around, they've been in nuclear power plant plots, but in the previous one, they became regulars at Moe's Bar, and now they are central to this plot. Like, the writers are now in love with Lenny and Carl, a love affair that would never die. And I also love that their ring opens up the Buzz Cola thing. Like, it's just...
That's really cool.
Though, how would nobody, like...
It looks like a Green Lantern ring.
Yes, but in real life, if everybody saw a ring on all these soda machines, like this spot for a ring, you're like, what is this? Like, that is proof of a Mason conspiracy. I just that runner of it's a secret.
It seems like almost everybody is in Springfield is in this except for Homer.
Yes,
so.
It truly is a no. It's
there's actually a lot of background characters that just come to life in this episode. Just Hans Molman, I think it's the only one not in.
Yeah, it's Merkins.
I actually wrote down a whole bunch of people who are not in it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's all men though, for sure though, right?
Yes, it's definitely a fraternal order.
It's a diverse group, but all men. They at least it's not an all white or yellow group. And but yeah, it's cute here too that Bart immediately jumps on the idea of a conspiracy, because he has not shaken his love of it, even after his discussion of reverse vampires.
So anyway, Lenny and Carl are never around on Wednesdays, and they don't tell me where they go. It's like a conspiracy.
A conspiracy, eh? You think they might be involved in the Kennedy assassination in some way?
I do. No. Anyway, I'm going to follow them tonight and see where they go.
Homer, don't start stalking people again. It's so illegal. Remember when you were stalking Charles Corral because you thought he dug up your garden?
Well, something did.
I don't want you stalking anyone tonight.
Oh, okay. Have it your own way, Marge. I'll be back in a minute. I'm going outside to stalk Lenny and Carl.
Don't!
You know, it would be really hard to stalk Charles Corral, because for 25 years, he did a segment on the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite called On the Road, where he would just do human interest stories all over America. I looked up some on the internet. They're not worth playing on this show. One was like, who invented the shopping cart? It's this really old Mr. Burns style guy in Oklahoma City.
I only remember Norm MacDonald did a parody of him on SNL when he died, and it was about all the women he fucked in every town he visited.
Yeah, he died in 1997, so he was not long for the tour.
I gave it to her so hard.
My family was not a CBS Evening News family. We were an NBC family, so I didn't
too much
know
of that Ed Bradley on your TV.
Yeah, too sexy, that Ed Bradley. I also, again, the Masons are connected in the JFK conspiracies, or in several of them. I'm more on the CIA.
Who built the book depository, Henry? What symbols
exactly
on that building?
I just want to point out for context, JFK was relatively fresh at this time, and also X-Files, as we saw a couple episodes ago, was huge. And so UFOs, the whole nine yards.
Let us not forget Fire in the Sky.
Everybody was talking about all this stuff in the 90s. And I mean, shows like, well, you guys were talking about Unsolved Mysteries, but also I think Sightings.
These
dumb shows on TV, which I used to watch, and were presenting this stuff as real. And people were like, I totally believe it.
Why would Fox lie to us?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, my God. I remember Sightings. I watched it all the time, and then it moved to Sci-Fi Channel, and they even made their own episodes on it.
It freaked the hell out of me as, like, a nine-year-old, you know?
Well, because you don't think your TV is lying to you. That's like, this. Even if it says dramatization, you're like, well, they filmed this.
It's like the people who believed in the witches movie. Oh, God, I can't remember
the
what
Vavitch?
It was. No, the one that was supposed to be at
Blair Witch.
Blair Witch Project. That's the one. Yeah.
It's something that hurt the X-Files when it came back for me. When I watched the new, I didn't even finish the new season, but the first episode, Joel McHale plays an Alex Jones type, which, one, is like, come on. Like, Alex Jones is not Joel McHale. Two, that then the Alex Jones guy is proven right. Like, everything he said to Mulder is like, Mulder, I want to show you this stuff. It's true. Mulder's like, oh, it is true. It's all true. It's like, this is, I think I get that Chris Carter, I'm going to assume that Chris Carter doesn't agree politically with Alex Jones, but he was just saying, like, well, who are the lone gunmen of today? I guess info.
Alex Jones said the recent massacre was deep state Democrats working with ISIS, and I believe him.
And OJ Simpson. Truth.
Oh, he's part of it too?
Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, Bob, you know, we're recording this a little in advance. You better be clear. You mean the Las Vegas massacre.
Right.
There could be more after we record this.
That is true. We live in America, folks.
I love his way of saying, going to stalk Lenny and Carl, just that he can't think of a lie, and he just keeps talking until he realizes he said the truth instead of the lie.
I think an analogy in a Mike Reiss episode, his brain would yell at him and he'd run away.
I feel
like that's more their style.
Merkin wasn't so into the Homer's brain talks to him kind of thing. His liver has talked to him more than his brain has.
That is true.
Or the episode where he's like working out the plan and he's going, okay, and now to the Duff Brewery. You're going to the Duff Brewery? Ah!
Yeah, see that back? I love that back and forth. So in by nine, out by five.
He can't keep it to himself.
That's
yeah.
true. So that was a very stupid Homer, but my mom, when I first watched this, she was very impressed with Homer's plan of the dripping paint. She's like, that's pretty clever.
Right. Yeah, that's clever for Homer.
I tried to look. I just assumed it was from something else.
I thought it was from some movie, but I could not find it. Like,
it's very clever. Actually, I listened to the commentary track for this episode, as I do with all of them, and Yardley Smith is on this, and she is the worst person on any commentary.
Yeah.
They're all watching the episode, and as you know, Lenny and Carl are driving away with the paint drip, he's like, oh, why is the paint dripping? That's so weird. Why is it doing that? Just like,
yes,
you were part of making the show.
Yeah, it's,
she had no lines there.
You were at the table read, probably.
She probably didn't watch it,
but she was there watching it with them as it was happening in the room.
Yeah, it's I all respect to Yardley Smith. She works hard on the show. It's not judgment, but yeah, she, as a commentator on the episodes,
yeah,
I'm like, you could have at least watched this before you came in here.
I mean, Julie Kavner is a little better, but she's always like, that's so sweet. That's so clever.
Well, though, also, she doesn't care.
Yeah.
Like, in the previous couple episodes.
I can see why people like this show.
When David Merkin makes a joke of, like, this is a reference to Blue Thunder, he's like, ah, right, Julie, Blue Thunder? She's like, only coming out of my ass.
Yeah.
Like, that's what she says. Like,
the salty old dame.
But instead, Yardley just constantly is like, oh, that's so clever. That's so funny. Meanwhile, Nancy is always like, I brought my original script here, and I thought this old joke that is actually worse was better. Then meanwhile, Dan is the most fun, I'd say. Well, Dan and Hank. Hank mainly just talks about his other jobs and
talk about Huff all the time.
Yeah, and then meanwhile, Dan is the most engaged in the show, and of course, Harry Shearer will never do a commentary ever.
Oh no.
So. And not even the movies, he wouldn't do it. We play that as the opening, but Lenny and Carl's expository thing about their secret meeting place is so great. Just like, yes, it is our secret meeting place.
The clumsiest exposition ever.
And his way, it made me think of playing video games and stealth missions when Homer goes,
that is video game for data mining.
And the whole concept of his whole plan is very video game. You can totally see, like, having the paint bucket item in your inventory that you attach to the car.
Yeah. Then he tries to go in the door and is turned away at the door, and then has to sneak up the building, and just he should have died from that fall, like that fall into
it. I mean, it's like Flaming Moe's. Wasn't he standing on top of the skylight there too?
Oh, that's no, he was up in the rafters,
skylight.
Okay.
That's one of two big falls he takes in this episode.
That's true.
He falls through multiple floors
after
falling through the ceiling.
How could Homer be okay? So he does. I mean,
he should be liquefied by now.
I mean. He does get punched repeatedly in the head by, like, multiple boxers.
That's
because
true.
Of that brain cushion thing. So
yeah, you're right. He has Homer Simpson syndrome, so he can survive those falls. Well, I mean, I guess not get a concussion, but Anyway, the animation of it cracking around him is so great. It
reminded me of actually the movie The Lost World, which would come out in 2 years.
Yeah,
except he wasn't
a
gymnast and they were not velociraptors.
That was the one good part of Jurassic Park Lost
World. It's the only
World.
Part I remember.
They're upside down and Vince Vaughn is about to... By the way, I was just invited to like this in the past now, but at New York Comic Con I was... Got in some invites to stuff like, hey, I have an interview with this person who directed this independent film, and they're doing this new film with Vince Vaughn. I was like, oh, which Vince Vaughn film? I looked it up. It's like, oh, the one he's making with Mel Gibson about cops who finally get rid of the rules and start really busting some heads. I'm like, I'm good. I don't think I need to see
That's
that.
Not tone deaf at all.
No, well.
It's just Dirty Harry again.
Yeah. Well, finally, Mel Gibson is going to tell it like it is,
oh,
man.
Boy.
Cops need to do what they need to do. All right, so then Homer has figured out what Lenny Carl's club is, and he wants in.
I saw weird stuff in that place last night. Weird, strange, sick, twisted, eerie, godless, evil stuff. Huh. And I want in.
We don't know what you're talking about, Homer.
And you can't join the Stonecutters because it's too exclusive.
Oh, well, that was a real nice secret organization we had once.
Stonecutters, eh? How do I join?
There are only two ways to gain membership. Be the son of a stonecutter.
Next.
Or save the life of a stonecutter.
Hey! I saved your life. That egg sandwich could have killed you by cholesterol.
Forget it, Homer. Uh-huh. While it has been established that eggs contain cholesterol, it has not yet been proven conclusively that they actually raise the level of serum cholesterol in the human bloodstream.
So one of those egg council creeps got to you too, huh?
Oh, you got it all wrong, Homer. It's not like that.
You'd better run, egg!
The man in the egg suit sounds like a rat. It's so
yes,
weird.
Yeah, it's so, yeah. I guess it's supposed to sound like little chicks chirping, perhaps?
I think it's just a rat noise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just like he's vermin. He's like a little creature or something. It's an odd choice, but I think we talked about the incredible edible egg on an episode of
in
Talking
Burns
Simpsons.
In Burns' Air, yeah. We covered it when Burns talked about the Egg Council Advisory Board. Eggs
right.
have gotten a bad rap lately, you know?
This is all of the era in which, oh, eggs are good for you now, and
yes.
soon carbs will be bad for you.
Well, the incredible edible egg campaign, it was kind of around that. That's the Egg Council. The Simpsons' obsession with the Egg Council continues quite a lot in this. I also just love how Homer goes, next, when hearing the son of a stonecutter, just because he... doesn't know that Grandpa is one. Mm-hmm. And
also, I don't think he even thinks about Grandpa most of the time.
That's true. Well, within the continuity of this episode, he has a mental block installed by hypnosis to make him not even think
sounds
of his
expensive,
father.
Just to ignore your father.
And that it was 2 years ago, which you think would prevent him from going on the road with him to sell tonic, but I also love just the passive aggressiveness of Lenny's like, real nice secret organization we had once. Like, it's just so then we also get a nice little flashback in the introduction of the ultimate club for Simpsons geeks, the No Homers Club.
Why don't people like me, Marge?
Everyone likes you. You're a wonderful person.
Why don't those stupid idiots let me in their crappy club for jerks?
I'm sure it's nothing personal, Homer.
It is. It's been happening to me all my life.
Hey, Billy! Hey, Joey! Come on in! There's plenty of room! Sorry, not you, Homer.
Why not? But you let in Homer Glumplet.
It says no Homers. We're allowed to have one.
Oh, I felt so left out.
Kids can be so cruel.
We can? Thanks, Mom.
Ow! Cut out, Bart!
Little kids just love coming up with really pedantic rules. No, mm-hmm. not no Homer Club, no Homers. Mm-hmm. We can have one. Like, we're going to find our little... I can't tell you how many times I got something like that where it's like, well, I found a loophole.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, no, you didn't. We meant it. This is the No Girls Allowed Club.
Yeah,
like,
pretty
but
much.
The actual No Homers Club in real life is an internet message board who does not hate The Simpsons as much as you would think. That is the Dead Homer Society. They hate The Simpsons, the newer Simpsons. By newer, I mean last 20 years of The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. So I posted there for 5 years. You can probably read all of my thoughts on episodes of that era and, you know, earlier. I think they're a fun group of people.
Yeah, the No Homers Club replaced alt.tv.simpsons as
right.
the top one in 2001. And it kind of, they've also like, they've hosted AMAs, or I guess
yeah.
before they were called AMAs, with people from the show. including Groening, Merkin, and also Oakley Weinstein not only did AMAs on there, but they also solicited questions that they then answered on the season 8 commentaries.
Yeah, that was such an awesome thing that they did for those people in the Homers. And that made me think, like, oh, they must like their fans because they're willing to do this for a website, you know.
Yeah, though also you'll hear No Homers brought up a lot on the commentaries as people who hate every episode and the show, not every show writer likes them. I think Mike Scully had a funny joke of saying, like, No Homers Club's favorite guy, Mike Scully, because they really hate Mike Scully and blame him for the downturn of the show, or at least some of them did at one point.
But, so I want to say here that I felt really bad for Homer.
Yeah.
And it really brings his kind of life into focus, where he had an abusive father who treated him like garbage and told him that he was really stupid and really just useless. And meanwhile, he clearly has no friends because he can't get into the club. As far as I can tell, his only friend is Barney. So
in a desperate moment.
And you know, when people are telling you you're garbage and worthless and stupid your entire life, you start to believe it. And we see just earlier that Homer had that very clever trap to stalk Lenny and Carl. And it tells you that there are moments where when Homer lets himself be, he can actually be kind of smart, but I think that he doesn't let himself be.
His confidence was kind of shot, I would say, probably by Abe.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, well, it's something, too, with Abe that we don't think about him as a father, that obviously this isn't continuity yet, but that Abe told him his mother died while he was at the movies and didn't even have a funeral
for her.
Like, that was pretty bad. Pretty bad, I'd say. And yeah, that he apparently did have no friends, and that everyone in town purposely had a club to not include him, and he got to be the scapegoat. Mm-hmm. It hurts to watch as anybody who remembers, like, a childhood of not being around people. And I have had that feeling, too, of, like, why won't they let me in their crappy club for jerks?
Video games were my friends.
I teamed up with my only friend to make, well, they have a no girls allowed club. We're going to have a no girls and no boys allowed club. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, just us. No one can get in but us. And, like, this sounds stupid. And it's my only failed attempt.
You want to feel exclusive.
Yeah, I wanted to feel exclusive.
You want to feel like you're a part of a thing.
I'm going to ostracize those who will not accept me, and that'll be great.
Though I also like Bart, speaking of kids being pedantic, like, Bart hears Marge and takes that as permission to be cruel to Lisa.
I choose to take that literally.
That is an excellent little sibling moment.
Oh, it's a total kid moment. No, you said no cookies after 8 p.m. These are popsicles. Like, doing that all the time. All the time.
It's how you learn negotiation. But, so then we get Grandpa makes an appearance, and I'd say he's gone down a few IQ points from the couple episodes ago.
What did they do there, Dad?
I'm a member.
What do they do? What don't they do? Oh, they do so many things, they never stop. Oh, the things they do there. My stars.
You don't know what they do there, do you?
Not as such, no.
I'm a stonecutter.
Dad, remember those self-hypnosis classes we took to help us ignore Grandpa?
Do I ever? It's 5 years later, and I still think I'm a chicken. I'm a chicken, Marge.
I know. Maybe we should be listening to him now.
I'm a member.
Huh?
What?
You're a member of the Stonecutters, Grandpa?
Oh, sure. Let's see. I'm an elk, a mason, a communist. I'm the president of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance for some reason. Ah, here it is. The Stonecutters.
This is it. My ticket in. They have to let me join if I'm a son of a member. I'll take this communist one, too.
What?
What?
Homer's a communist now?
I guess, well, that Abe was as well.
Everybody cool is, kids.
That Abe is officially a mason, too. He's a member of the real thing that they're making fun of.
That's right, yeah.
I love that Homer didn't give a crap about Abe until he's like, oh, now I can use him, and just see him pointing that thing at me line. It's just like that he's just like, see, it's my dad.
His dad there like as a prop.
Yeah, it's so great. And so Homer gets it put into the place, and I love when he makes fun of, my name is number one. Like, the way Lenny and Carl react of, like, what are you doing?
Yeah. You're making fun. I love when he runs out of steam and so forth.
And then the idea that somehow Mr. Burns is below Lenny and Carl, which, like, they can't have how could he have joined after Lenny and Carl unless they inherited numbers from their dads or something, maybe?
Maybe they were already in it, and they Mr. Burns found out about it because of them.
Maybe, but...
He seems like a relatively new, like, initiation person, because he was going, Patience, Monty, climb the ladder.
I'm going to make up some background fiction. He found out about the club, and he paid for some older man to adopt him, and then become his father.
Oh,
it's a very Burns thing to do.
Yeah, that does sound like... And his thank you, sir, may I have another, is what Kevin Bacon says when he is paddled in Animal House, which paddling is quite an important part of this episode.
All that movie holds up real well.
Yeah, it's oh, boy. All the people who love that movie are great people.
Or really old.
Yes, yeah. And I also love when Mo is giving plot important exposition. Homer's like, eh, that's your life story. Like he has to set up how big the Stonecutters are and the Chosen One thing. And Homer's like, God, shut up. Like that's.
But whenever somebody joins one of these organizations, there's always a freaking prophecy that has to be fulfilled by the end of the episode. And somebody has to explain it to him. So I like that Homer's like, yeah, whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, the Masons have an initiation, but it's not anything like this as far as I know.
I wouldn't think so. But
there is no consistent rule set for each Mason group. They each kind of make up their own thing in each territory.
Yeah,
but,
this initiation feels a lot more like Skull and Bones or just
fraternity.
A frat-ish thing. Yeah, and that's when we get... I dare say the best non-Kelsey Grammer guest voice they've ever had.
I agree.
All Stonecutters must take the leap of faith. If you survive this 5-story plunge, your character will be proven.
Happy landings!
Four. Five.
I think I have to do it again. My blindfold came off.
This ritual is called crossing the desert. And this we call the unblinking eye.
Hey, have you ever noticed that the crossing the desert is a lot like the unblinking eye? It's exactly like the wreck of the Hesperus.
And now the final ordeal, the paddling of the swollen ass. With paddles.
I love how he leans in to say, with paddles.
So that is Patrick Stewart, a.k.a. Jean-Luc Picard, a.k.a. Professor Xavier.
Only about 7 months removed from filming the final episode of Star Trek and the Next Generation.
I don't know why I bothered researching this, as I knew you were coming. Yeah, like just it ended in May?
Yeah, it ended in May of 1994, which is when I became a Star Trek fan, actually.
So they must have been working on Generations at that point.
Yeah, they would have been making, because Generations came out in 95.
I didn't know that he did that like back-to-back, like right
Pretty
after he
much.
Got a set of TNG, went and did Generations. And this is the most prominent thing Patrick Stewart was in, period, following the conclusion of Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. And X-Men.
Well, X-Men would come later.
Wait, like 99?
Yeah. No, 2000.
2000. Yeah. That just something I went down a rabbit hole of. There's this documentary, this semi-documentary called In Search of Dr. Seuss. Look, if you want nightmare fuel, it's all live action. Kathy Najimy from Peggy Hill stars in it in this search for more information on Dr. Seuss. Matt Frewer, Max Headroom is dressed like the cat in the hat.
I remember
Billy
this.
Crystal, Robin Williams. It's the creepiest shit I've ever seen in my entire life, but that's the only other thing Patrick Stewart had done between.
I remember he was also, I think this was during Star Trek, he was in this very gay film, Jeffrey.
I love Jeffrey a lot. That was later in the year.
Okay.
I love that fucking movie. That movie was hilarious.
The wonderful thing about Patrick Stewart is that he has an amazing sense of humor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just, he has a kind of a twinkle in his eye. He's kind of a prankster's sense of humor. And so he saw, it seems that he really understood the humor of The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. And he really leaned into it. Of course, Patrick Stewart, as we know, is a classically trained Shakespearean actor.
But he played it straight, and it was great.
I mean, he played it straight, but he used the way that he delivered his lines to highlight the absurdity of the character. It was great.
He definitely had some very funny moments on Star Trek The Next Generation,
too. Yes.
He got to exercise. I also like that he's called number one when he always called Jonathan Frakes number one.
I think that was intentional, too. Yeah.
And I can't imagine being a little Star Trek fan at that time and this is the first prominent appearance of Picard since your favorite show ended.
I definitely gasped when I heard his voice. I was like, oh my God,
we don't
Picard.
Know if he's bald, though. He never takes off that damn hat.
Well, because if I'm not mistaken, like when you were a little kid, they didn't always announce who the guest voice was. You were usually surprised.
Yeah, I mean, if you read TV guides, you might
find out. If you read the trades
out.
Or something like that.
Actually, I found an interesting thing. I plan to do more with it, but I got some old issues of Simpsons Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And there's a crazy one where it's like it's the third or fourth issue, and it's right before the third season premieres. And it was written by somebody who clearly knew what every episode of season 3 was and just said, and then your Krusty's going to meet his dad, and then this is going to happen. It was like, it was every episode synopsis.
I mean,
it was so strange.
To the wiki, there was official art commission for every episode,
yeah.
And I guess those were printed in some papers or TV guide. I've never seen them.
And Patrick Stewart was also... He'd become an even zanier leader in American Dad.
Yeah, he's
as
great
the
in
head
that
of
show.
The CIA.
Butt
he's very,
stuff.
And they just draw him to be Patrick Stewart.
He's drawn as Patrick Stewart in that
And
show.
Then he eventually, like, after his, by his third appearance, he's like, he's an insane person who will murder anyone for, like, a cookie. Like, that's
he
all
he seems kind of willing to do whatever because, I mean, he did the poop emoji in that horrible emoji movie.
Yep.
And I think probably they just said, you can be the poop emoji. And he's like, I'm in. Done.
It would be 2 hours and a lot
Please
of money.
Enjoy him in Logan, though. He was so goddamn
he
good
ruled
in Logan.
In that. He really
Because he's an amazing actor. He's an extremely hardworking actor. In fact, when he first came over to the U.S., one of the things that really dismayed him about Star Trek The Next Generation was that he felt that his castmates weren't working as hard as he was.
Oh, shit. Jonathan Frakes, let's throw down.
I also really liked he's a funny dude on social media. Mm-hmm. I also like him talking about how I believe he is very openly like against spousal abuse because his mother had been abused by his father.
Yeah,
and that
he's head of several charities or nonprofits.
He's an amazing man.
And he's like hetero life mates with Ian McKellen. Like they're not gay together, but basically.
They smoke weed together, hang out in tree houses together.
He said later, I think my appearance in The Simpsons and an appearance that I did on Sesame Street in praise of the letter B were perhaps the two most distinguished bits of work that I've done in the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's Patrick Stewart right there.
I also loved him on Extras.
Oh, my. He's Totally Patrick naked. Stewart's episode was the best episode in that entire
so
show.
So much booty.
I saw everything.
I saw it. I see everything.
She already puts stuff up.
Totally. He said that so matter-of-factly. Like,
I also, he's just like, so you're single, but you've never seen Star Trek, really. The Wreck of the Hesperus, by the way, is a real poem. It is a narrative poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and first published in 1840. It is about a...
swollen ass?
It's about a shipwreck caused by too much pride.
Oh, okay.
They should have had more paddles. They wouldn't have it.
That's true.
Just like the swollen ass. Just hearing him say swollen
with paddles.
So there was this... Homer is going through a very fraternity-style initiation. I suppose none of you guys went through a similar initiation.
Certainly not.
No.
We put a younger kid in our neighborhood through nothing that crazy. We just like made him run around a construction site. But we like, yeah, if you want to be friends with us, you got to ride your bike really fast.
And... So I was in marching band in college.
Oh.
And marching band is very much a, well, fraternal sorority kind of organization, like co-ed, obviously. But we did not have to do any of the, real hazing or anything. But we did have a paddle. You were given a paddle, and you had to, like, decorate it.
Oh.
And you had to carry it around with you everywhere for a month. And also, you had somebody
in addition to being in band?
Yep, because...
Jesus.
I mean, the band was, like, a club. It was really intense. The membership was really intense. Once you were in, all the bandmates, they were your friends. You dated within the band. It was actually a little bit of a cult, and I got a little tired of it because it took up a lot of my time.
I think you were secretly part of a polyamorous relationship with instruments involved.
Yeah, it was like 50 people.
But,
Jesus.
The final day, they make you wake up at midnight, or they make you come out at midnight, and you're supposed to be playing for the Midnight Madness stuff, and then you're going marching down the street and everything.
Wow.
So,
what?
Yeah, with the paddle. So whenever I see that paddle...
With paddles.
But the paddles were never used.
Oh,
right?
No, they was never actually used. We just all had to have paddles if you were a first-year person.
I see.
There was no board of education in your school.
Well, Homer makes it through all of these tests, and he gets to take the oath.
And by the sacred parchment,
I swear that if I reveal the secrets of the stonecutters, may my stomach become bloated and my head be plucked of all but three hairs.
I think you should have to take a different oath.
Everyone takes the same oath. Welcome to the club, number 908. You have joined the sacred order of the stonecutters, who since ancient times have split the rocks of ignorance that obscure the light of knowledge and truth. Now let's all get drunk and play ping pong.
Yeah! He's already kind of heavy, you know.
Great act break. So Homer does have his old crappy parking space, but he's given rollerblades, a very mid-90s thing. I like how confident he is, despite how shitty he is at rollerblading.
He's rollerblades. Like I said, this is great act mirroring. It's synchronicity that he... All three of his problems from the start of the show are fixed by being a stonecutter.
Oh, that's right. It opens with the Stern Lecture plumbing guy returning.
Stern Lecture plumbing guy fixes it because they're both the same thing. Really? Yes. And then he can avoid traffic because he's in the stonecutters. He then gets rollerblades and he gets a new chair to replace his stool. He gets all four of those things fixed immediately. Like, that's how much it is. I just love when they hand him his stonecutter new membership packet, too. It's perfect.
Jealous?
Well, no, we've got the same chair.
You're jealous.
Your membership pack.
What's this?
You put that sticker on your car so you won't get any tickets. And this other one keeps paramedics from stealing your wallet while we're working on you.
Oh, and don't bother calling 911 anymore. Here's the real number.
912.
This is the part I love the most of the idea of, like, if I were to join the Masons, immediately they would hand me all the secret things and be like, see, this is, now your life's perfect. And I have seen cars with the Mason tag on it, and I did wonder, like, what does this do for you?
Yeah, I always assume that when I see a car with stick figures of a family, I'm like, what cult is this involved in?
Is that just like the new Disney on board, a baby on board thing? No idea,
but they're confusing. I don't know anybody personally who has them on their car, but I see them everywhere.
And I also just love that Homer has a book that's called Secret World History. He's just learning that you're just handed that willy-nilly to somebody, like, and that Homer, through the entire sequence, is so cavalierly telling his entire family about the stonecutters, which...
Because he has to share.
But everybody else is... keeping it a secret. They don't tell anybody.
Homer's going to keep this a secret. Come on. Yeah, he's got to brag to everybody. That's what insecure people do.
I want
to
believe their version of the signing of the Declaration of Independence was real, though. I feel like that is what our country was founded on.
It's probably like 1799.
I still don't believe all the founding fathers were stonecutters.
That's because you trust your stupid school books. Here's what really happened at the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
And a nation is born. Now let us party like 'twas 1799.
Please, sir, you're destroying my establishment.
We just created the greatest democracy on earth, you low-life commoner. Get out!
You want to see how Davy Crockett really died at the Alamo? You must be 18.
That is one of the most vicious kicks to the face ever animated in The Simpsons from Thomas Jefferson.
The thing about politicians, like, assaulting commoners is still true today.
I just love how he says, like, the greatest democracy on earth, you low-life commoner. And it is also true not just that a lot of the founding fathers were members of the Freemasons, but that people believe that Washington, D.C. was designed with a lot of Masonic imagery around it when they made it the capital. If you've ever gone around Washington, D.C., you're like, there are a lot of obelisks. You cannot deny that. Like, there's quite a lot of them. But honestly, D.C.'s kind of a bore.
Especially in the obelisk district. Crawling with obelisks.
And of course, people love to point out the symbol at the on our money and go, aha, the symbol of the Masons, which is actually fairly common imagery. But
yeah, I mean.
They control everything, including our money.
Then the question is like, okay, what if they do? What are we going to do something about it? Or are you just going to enjoy your slavery, man? Let's take a break on the greatest song in Simpsons history and then talk about it.
Who controls the British crown? Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do.
Who leaves Atlantis off the maps?
Who keeps the Martians under wraps?
We do.
Back the electric car.
makes Steve Gutenberg a star. We do. Who robs Steve Fish of their sight?
Who rigged every Oscar night?
We do.
Thank you.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Who keeps the metric system down? Who pays for this podcast? Why, our wonderful listeners who sign up at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. We have this Patreon so that Bob and myself can do this full time and help pay our rent while doing this podcast. And it has given you so many awesome things for just $5 a month. You'll get access to every episode of the show a week early. You'll get access to every episode of Talking Critic, our Patreon exclusive show where we go through the Critic episode by episode. Our monthly community podcast, access to the entire first season of Talking Simpsons only there. And there's even more stuff if you sign up at just $10 a month. I know, we talk about this all the time, but it is because it is our lifeblood and it helps us be free from the tyranny of conspiracies like the Stonecutter. So please consider going to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons today. Official Stonecutter underwear is nice, and it looks even better if you're wearing a Talking Simpsons t-shirt at the same time. But where do you find your own Talking Simpsons t-shirt that's only $19.99 and comes in multiple sizes? Men's, women's, fitted, all that stuff. Well, you'll find it at shirtsickle.com. If you just go to shirtsickle.com and find the podcast section, you'll find the Talking Simpsons t-shirt right in there. An easier way to see it, though, is to go to tiny.cc/talkingshirt. And it'll take you directly to it. It's a wonderful design based on the logo for Ion Springfield, made by awesome friend of the show, Nina Matsumoto. It looks great. I have one myself. I love it. Wear it outside all the time. I'm with pride, damn it. And again, a beautiful sky blue. Check it out at tiny.cc/talkingshirt.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Happy Halloween.
Yes, Lizzie. Tis the season for Halloween spooktaculars, and we have launched a brand new series.
An Elm Street Nightmare.
No, good scream, Liz. It's a brand new limited podcast series all about our favorite horror series.
A Nightmare on Elm Street.
Every week in October, talk with us about our favorite horror villain, Freddy Krueger. Here's a highlight.
You know, I was very young when I watched it. I was also covering my eyes and, like, I didn't know what was happening. It was scary. But I didn't really realize 100% that that was Freddy Krueger. Yeah, and that image was burned into my memory for a very long time. It was like, that was a really scary movie. I think it was Poltergeist or something because, you know, it was like a girl on a TV.
Outside of the kill itself, the image of her hanging lifeless from her neck, from like a mounted television at the top of the ceiling,
that I see that very, very clearly.
Yeah.
This is it, Jennifer. Your big break in TV. Fuck the prime time, bitch.
Sucks her head through the television.
Your big break in TV.
Big break in TV.
Very clever, Freddy. Very clever.
But, like, I love that Robert Englund, there's a clip, I have a clip of him. It's one of his most famous lines, if not his most famous, and it's the only one he'll cop to ad-libbing.
Most, if not all, of what you see in these movies is written by the writers. I think Welcome to Prime Time, Bitch is the only time I ever completely improvised a line on my own that became a kind of, you know, I mean, I've had to sign that 10,000 times as an autograph. And I've heard it quoted, you know.
I want a signed Robert Englund 8x10 black and white photo saying it's Prime Time, Bitch.
I think only Aaron Paul in 2017 can get away with signing autographs. Yeah, bitch.
Listen to An Elm Street Nightmare
every Tuesday
at elmstreetnightmare.com
or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, I love that song. I think tied with Monorail, that's my favorite song.
There's one thing that kills it for me, and it's the Steve Guttenberg joke.
Yes.
Yeah. Even as a 13-year-old in 1995, I was like, that's a bit hacky.
It's beneath The Simpsons, and I looked it up. It had been 5 years since Steve Guttenberg had been in a single film.
Actually, we just did a Talking Critic from an episode from 1994, and there's also a Steve Guttenberg joke in that. Yeah. And we looked up the data. You're right, Chris. It's like early 90s. Yeah. The last time he had like a hit movie.
He was in Three Men and a Little Lady, and then nothing until 1995.
Well, played an unbilled dad in The Big Green, starring the great Hambino.
Now, if they had changed the tense to who made Steve Guttenberg a star, I'd be on board with this. I'm angry now. Sorry, Kat, go ahead.
Well, they said that they constructed the song in part by throwing in things that annoyed them, and there was clearly somebody who was not a Steve Guttenberg fan.
Yeah.
I wonder if they had
he was in Police Academy and movies like that.
I think Steve Guttenberg by 1995 had become an... It's easy to be mad at somebody who you think is undeserving of their success.
Mm-hmm. Like Adam Sandler.
Yes, but not everybody is a safe target.
Yes.
Steve Guttenberg was absolutely a safe target in 1995. If they wanted to say who made Jim Carrey a star, for example, then that'd be wrong.
Because it's equally impossible to love and hate Steve Guttenberg. Mm-hmm. He's not the greatest. It's inexplicable how he had his name in so many movies, but like
he's still working today.
He's still working. Seems like a good dude.
He's on Ballers right now. Like Jesus, really? He's been in this entire season of Ballers.
I can't believe I'm not caught up on my Ballers.
You're a sporto. Have you been watching Ballers, Kat?
I am a sporto, but I have not been watching.
But she also has taste.
Was it the Vin Diesel vehicle?
No, it's the Rock one.
The Rock.
Mm-hmm. Those two guys hate each other. Like it was something I didn't notice until I watched the very humorous, honest trailer about the most recent Fast and the Furious movie. The Rock and Vin Diesel share no scenes and are not near each other at all because Vin Diesel thinks those movies are real and he treats it like wrestling. Like he's like, I don't lose to nobody. And then The Rock is like, dude, come on, just be cool. Yeah, it's a movie.
Unlike you, I do 10 of these a year.
That's why there's a line in Fast and the Furious 6 where he has to say, like, it's like you're fighting with weighted boxing gloves. When he loses a car thing, he's like, his character has to say, you cheated. Everybody in the audience needs to know that my character wouldn't lose.
It's very Trumpian.
Well, the joke will be on Vin Diesel when President The Rock beats him for the election.
No,
presidents
please.
From now on will only be celebrities. Like, and speaking of presidents,
while democracy lasts,
the metric system. Let's talk about that, too. The metric system, America hates it because we love we got our own shit, man.
Which just the system that doesn't have a name?
We get four rods to a hog's
head. It's the imperial system.
Is that what it's called?
It's called the imperial system,
I mean, but it's just all awful and ununiform, and every time I'm confused by the metric system, but every time I see it, like, this works so much better. This is a scientific system.
I mean, whenever I cook, I'm like, Siri, how many tablespoons in a pint? How many, you know, this and a that? Because
16,
it doesn't make
four.
Any sense.
It's awful. Do you know why we don't have the metric system?
Because it's European?
Well, it was Reagan who killed it, right? Wasn't it?
I needed to look. I wish I would have looked it up, but I heard an NPR story a long time ago that I wish I would have corroborated about the pitch for the metric system coming over on a ship that was sieged by pirates. So it never showed up. So the plan never showed up while America was founding itself. And somebody slipped
all the way back then.
The way back then, not the Reagan days.
Well, so there was an attempt in the 70s to bring the metric system in here. Not just in Carter, though it was kind of seen as like...
Here comes the metric system.
This wussy Carter trying to do it. But,
that's socialist Jimmy Carter and his metric system.
But like Congress had set up a metric system adaptation group in 1975 to try to get us on the metric system. When Reagan came in, he was very clear of like, we don't need this. Like, this is un-American. It was very anti-Americanism. So he disbanded that council in 1982, forever giving up on the metric system in America.
You're a rugged individualist and always will be. But also remember to vote, individuals. What? God damn it, I hate this country.
And also, the electric car stopped being stopped by the stonecutters. We now do have electric cars.
We do. Only now. Manufactured by American companies who seemed to be stalwarts. Didn't want to jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah, they held out as long as they could, but now they found a way to make money off. That's the only reason people I read about are like, solar is starting to be more profitable than diesel, and so people will start doing it then, only when it's more profitable.
I hope Elon Musk comes through with that Puerto Rican rebuild, like he using that as a test case for all of Solar while they're rebuilding.
I just wish he'd make a train instead of a spaceship. That old that spaceship thing sounds cute, but it's like I want trains.
I wouldn't mind a bullet train.
I want a bullet train at Disneyland right now.
And did you guys spot that the egg of the Egg Council is a member of them as well?
Isn't Hitler on there too?
I missed Hitler. I didn't see him. There.
The Martian is there.
But noticing that the Martian is there the whole time.
Yeah,
and he's just focused on that one part of the song.
And they're like, oh, okay, so we're accepting in the world of The Simpsons there is a little green man.
It's canon now. There are aliens in The Simpsons.
And that Atlantis exists.
Atlantis does exist, but it's south of New Orleans. And yes, that city is definitely underwater.
There was some talk of cave fish as well.
Yes, who robs cave of fish of their sight, which they are blind fish that live in brackish waters.
Really? There's an Illuminati organization that took the sight away from fish?
That's part of a conspiracy.
I guess it's just to rhyme with Who Rigs Every Oscar Night, which I guess isn't tied to the Marissa Tomei didn't deserve an Oscar fear.
I think it's more that Goodfellas had just lost to Dancing with Wolves.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
That was 5 years ago, though. I think the Tomei thing was more recent.
Well, I mean, everybody's always mad about the best picture in Oscars, so of course every Oscar night is rigged.
So I did want to share with you guys from the game of Virtual Springfield. The Stonecutters Society is in the game and you can visit it, and actually even has a gameplay function thing in there. If you get you find Monty Burns' secret key that gets you into another area at the Stonecutters Club. But in it, Dan Castellaneta does an original a cappella version of the Stonecutters theme. I want to play it for you guys here.
Wow.
Who controls the British crown? Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do. Who leaves Atlantis off the maps? Who keeps the Martians under wraps? We do. We do. Who holds back the electric car? Who made Steve Gutenberg a star? We do. We do. Who robs cavefish of their sight? Who rigs every Oscar night? We do. We do.
Yeah, he really belted that out.
Recorded on an Edison cylinder.
Yes. That whole scene was as static as just that rendition of the song. The scene is a cappella. No one moves.
The only thing the animated is Homer moving is like Bierstein back.
A tiny Homer sprite.
Yes, but it's
reminiscent of the opening shot of the song.
Yeah. Yeah, they drew in everybody there. You can see if you look squint in there.
That final fight meat log.
Yes. And there's not many other jokes in there other than Homer apparently sleeps at the lodge, and you can have him say like three different jokes if you snuff out a candle. But it's just, it was just a cute scene from that game, Virtual Springfield, which, if you are a subscriber to Patreon, you can listen to our interview with one of the executive producers of the game, Paul Provenzano, who tells us a ton of things, including that Dan Castellaneta was very giving compared to other actors on it. And I think that's an example of it. He's just like, yeah, I'll sing the song. No backing track, though. Like, just get this, like, write your own version. But I bet that would have added some
pay
some
money
cost
to Al Clausen, yeah.
Yeah.
So here's the funny thing about this song. I heard the song before I saw the episode.
How?
For some reason, around the time that I started getting into The Simpsons, I came in very late, but I bought the CD Songs in the Key of Springfield, and I listened to it a lot because the songs were extremely catchy, and I really liked the Stonecutter song. Mm. But of course, I couldn't just buy the DVDs or watch them on Netflix, so I was totally at the mercy of syndication. But of course, eventually, came up. But I heard this on the CD way more than I saw it on the TV.
I listened to that CD a million times. Yeah.
It includes the priority with Marge talking about the secret wink wink at the you know what.
Yes.
Whenever I hear that line, like, I immediately flash back to the CD because that's how it starts.
That's true. Yeah, the mixing on that, I think they needed a few lines in there just so it would be like a 50-minute CD. Otherwise, if it was just the songs, it'd be like 20 minutes long at best. And that's with them sneaking in some of the soundtrack, you know, or some of like
the closing arrangements.
Yeah. Then in honor of the 1,500 years of the Stonecutters, they're having ribs. I do love Homer just destroying It's so crazy how much he doesn't get that he's destroying the parchment and why everybody's mad at him.
How no one dives in to take it from him, and he just keeps making it worse, picking up on no social cues at all.
It's so great. He's that stupid.
I mean, it's really great slapstick. Like, it's pretty amazing.
Especially when he starts cleaning his ears with it.
Yeah. Here too? Is it? Are you guys saying I'm super dirty? What the... I've had that feeling at parties too of like, am I doing everything wrong? Do I have a thing on my face? What's wrong?
Literally everything you're doing, Homer, and just freeze.
Yes.
God.
And then he then destroys the parchment some more, just smashes it. And just so you know, the ghosts leaving his underwear is a Raiders of the Lost Ark reference.
Oh, right.
Just to be clear. And it's also great that Leopold is a member, that he's like menacing number one behind him when they're throwing on Homer.
I did want to ask, when Homer is in the gear for the first time and wanders out into the satin sheet, I'm pretty sure that's a reference to something specific.
Oh, it's the Last Emperor.
The Last Emperor, yes. Right?
The Little Child Emperor.
The movie from 1987.
I looked it up. Is it Little Buddha? It's not Kundun. It's
I thought the Golden Emperor. Child at first, but it just really... it's all about smirking Eddie Murphy.
I saw that movie in social studies when I was 14.
What a lazy teacher.
Yeah, I did watch
that. Here's what we'll be doing for the next 2 weeks.
But it was a memorable film. It was really good. So
We also talked about The Last Emperor when Homer was revealed to be eating flowers, because that was taken from The Last Emperor as well. So yeah, Homer is punished and is left nude in front of all of his friends.
Homer Simpson, for your continuing and baffling desecration of our beloved sacred parchment, you are hereby banished from the stonecutters forever. And as a final humiliation, you must walk home naked, dragging behind you the stone of shame. The mark.
Oh, that. It's just a birthmark, and I'll thank you not to stare.
He's the chosen one.
You are the chosen one whom the sacred parchment prophesied would lead us to glory. Now to the top of Mount Springfield for the coronation. Remove the stone of shame.
Woohoo!
Attach the stone of triumph.
No!
That's the Just Stamp the Ticket guy attaching the stone.
Oh, I missed that. I didn't see that was him.
And I think Leopold approaching.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, Leopold in the background. Homer is violently naked, dragging the stone away. His dick should be all over the place. They do a great job of hiding it.
Waving around like a windsock.
Yes.
Yeah, in all that effort, it should be flapping about quite a lot. All the times we've seen Homer naked, never seen that birth mode since. Yeah.
Or before.
The birth, but I do love the animation of just his like pulling the stone of triumph.
He's got to pull up a damn mountain.
and so yeah, then we reveal Homer as the chosen one, and we get the Last Emperor stuff. And I love that Homer resists the idea, like him just saying everything lasts forever. Is so great.
I always wondered if there was a god, and now I know there is. And it's me.
You're not a god, Homer.
Remember, Dad, all glory is fleeting.
So?
Beware the Ides of March.
No.
Dad, I know you think you're happy now, but it's not going to last forever.
Everything lasts forever.
Don't you see? Getting what you want all the time will ultimately leave you unfulfilled and joyless.
Remove the girl.
Dad, you're not with your stonecutters now. There are no lackeys around to carry out your every...
Bart is trying to score points with the stonecutters.
That's my favorite line. Everything lasts forever.
He's a son of a stonecutter.
Let's give it best line then.
That's the joke.
Woo. I didn't even have to vote for that. Go too hard.
Everything lasts forever.
Everything lasts forever.
Everything lasts forever.
Actually, that scene made me think about it in retrospect, that Bart ends up pretty bad at this, because he's never going to get to join the No Homers Club unless he saves the life of a member. That's the only way. Like, his dad will prevent him from ever being a part of the No Homers Club.
So, as usual, Homer Simpson ruins everything for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially his family.
Yeah. I like that immediately Homer finds out that getting everything he wants all the time is unfulfilling, and that I just love the acting on everybody.
Yeah,
like because they can't say he's imperfect. It's so great.
I'm out.
No, Homer, you have the royal sampler.
Oh, I win again, don't I? Woohoo!
Good one. Yeah.
You know, I think you guys are letting me win.
No.
Well, I want you to be honest with me. I mean, I'm not perfect, right?
Run.
That's great stammering from everybody.
Yes, yeah. And a great Wiggum screen at the end.
I just like when they're ready to run, they're like, run! That's always the answer. Homer then goes to Lisa and asks for help, and that his... It's underrated. I missed it in so many viewings until about now, but just the way Skinner backs out of the room without lifting his head.
Yeah, and he stands at attention when Homer comes in. He, like, straightens up.
And then has to grovel and leave. And I also like that Miss Hoover is also excited that this class is...
Yay.
Yay.
In the typical Miss Hoover fashion.
Yes, yeah. That she,
extremely jaded.
Yeah, they don't get as much out of her as they could. Then they took him forever to do a blowjob joke with her. It was a very long time. It was in a flash forward where Bart has sex with her in some season.
I guess I did want to point that out. Like, this happened in the first six seasons, but this is a batshit crazy episode.
It's pretty crazy.
This is a Springfield world changing event.
Yes,
there are aliens.
There are aliens. There's
it's
Atlantis.
Not even a Halloween episode, and it's like, but everybody loves it.
Everybody's in the
cult.
Yeah,
I mean, John Swartzwelder's last season six episode was Itchy and Scratchy Land, where they fought evil robots at the
it's
end.
True.
So
it just seems like one of those things people would rag on if it came out.
Well,
in season
27.
Well,
just think about, like, season six was that was 6 years. Yeah. Think about how many. What shows are doing when usually season six is really late for a TV show.
No, most people who worked in season six were like, well, this is the steam engine is coming into the station.
Wasn't
this is almost
Bill
over.
Bill Oakley was like, well, we all thought that it was going to end soon, so we just threw everything we had at the wall, you know?
The Poochie episodes basically ends with them saying, and this is the end of the show.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... Everybody's going to turn it off.
We'll never see the year 2000.
And then Homer pitches all those monkeys reenacting the Civil War. I just love it. I was like, let's say Sawyer Hart started hurting people, which they almost certainly would. And somehow Lisa convinces him to give to charity, which I love that disgusts every stonecutter. They can't imagine doing charity.
Especially Mo.
Brothers! 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 I've learned a wonderful lesson. Helping others makes our own lives better and makes us better people. So instead of just shooting pool and drinking beer, let us stonecutters use what we have to help the less fortunate.
He's gone mad with power, like that Albert Schweitzer guy.
Mm-hmm. Mo is the secret MVP of this episode, in my opinion. He has so many great lines.
Oh,
he's
screaming.
He's reacting to so many different things.
But I've done Albert Schweitzer research.
Oh,
yes.
I did a tiny bit too, but
I know
we
were all
more.
Screaming for Albert Schweitzer info, but he was just a famous humanitarian. He won the Nobel Peace Prize for the, I believe it was an essay called Reverence for Life. And I can read you his basic mission statement. Ethics is nothing other than reverence for life. Reverence for life affords me my fundamental principle of morality, namely that good consists in maintaining, assisting, and enhancing life, and to destroy or harm or hinder life is evil. So it's all about respecting life.
I don't know, Bob. If the market says somebody shouldn't have health care, I think they should just starve. I mean,
you know what? You're right.
Yeah.
I can make a rich person's life worse by asking them for food.
Yeah.
So
here's the funny thing about everybody freaking out about Homer's proclamation. In real life, the Masons are actually an extremely charitable organization.
They are.
Multiple hospitals are always giving the charity a lot. Mm-hmm.
And you promise they're not the Shriners.
I mean, the Shriners
are
also
part of them, right?
They have little cars. Though.
Yeah. I do know that Jack Chick hated the Shriners.
He hated everybody.
He did hate every. He hated every Christian. He
Except
hated
Jesus.
Even. He's just like, well, these other Catholics, they're not real Catholics like me. No, they're not that. Like, it's like, so you hate all but like 700 people on earth, maybe? Yes, Albert Schweitzer, for the record, never went mad with power. He was a great humanitarian. Mm-hmm. That's who he was. Speaking of a great Mo line, this is another awesome one.
Yeah.
Whee! Oh, for the love of God! Somebody get the joys of life!
Followed by a great
Higher!
Song.
Higher!
Oh, I'll give you higher, my filthy little urchin. You've won this round.
He's in the middle of threatening the child and he gets smashed again.
I love
the
most screaming so
just
much.
The sound of it, you know that he's like, you think that he's crippled, like he's like, yeah, his back has been broken, and you just hear him pounding on his side, like, get me out.
I know very little,
screaming.
I know very little about voice acting. It is really hard to scream
as Mo,
as in that voice, and have it consistent with the character.
And the jaws of life is like an electric biting thing to cut through any metal. Like,
it's like a giant, like scissors almost.
Yeah.
The way
yeah.
it works.
I just saw it used on WWE programming recently, where
it's the best use of it. I think
a character decides to basically murder another wrestler by backing his ambulance into a wall and smashing him in it. But don't worry, the other wrestler was fine because he's that tough, man. But yes, just that Mo's wee, him going from wee to crippling pain is so hilarious.
And they cause another helicopter crash in this episode by painting a building sky blue. They're painting over the graffiti.
Which, when I talk about the color of the Talking Simpsons t-shirt at tiny.cc/talking-shirt, I describe it as a beautiful sky blue because of this.
You will not get attacked by helicopters.
Yeah, I can't. I won't promise
that.
Will
you?
We'll
get,
no. We'll, not legally binding.
Just don't jump too high in the air with that thing on.
But it's just beautiful that anytime they try to do something nice, it hurts people.
Yes.
And that the stonecutters can't stand it.
Yeah, and the World Council steps in, and there are four people on this World Council. Orville Redenbacher, popcorn magnate. Do we need to explain who this guy is? He was on TV for about a decade.
Yeah.
He's a real guy.
Was he the real guy on TV?
He was the real guy.
That was the real Orville.
The person playing his grandson, I believe, was an
actor.
And there's a great Mystery Science Theater 3000 sketch about their animosity towards each other. Called look up Orville Popcorn on YouTube. You'll find it.
I think this might be a reference to the fact that Colonel Sanders was a Mason.
Oh,
okay. Interesting.
Yeah. That was the first thing that popped into my mind.
The Orville, they tried to raise him from the dead, not unlike they have done with the Colonel. In this case of raising him from the dead, that they like put a plastic mask on a dude and just like, see, I'm Orville Redenbacher. I'm back. Like, this is gross. At the very least, when they have comedians playing the Colonel, it's obvious you know they're a comedian. You're like, okay, you're not trying to fool me. A dead man is walking around.
Yeah.
Like, and then part of their apology tour for the Orville Redenbacher corpse was that they're like, okay, we'll just air old commercials with the real Orville, and we still respect him. Like, it's good popcorn. I'm more of a movie theater butter Pop Secret guy. That's my brand of popcorn.
Secret, the one that with
Paul
different
Newman.
Colors. Oh, it's Pop Quiz. I'm sorry,
Pop Quiz.
Pop
right.
Quiz. It's definitely not a Jiffy Pop person.
I'm more of a store brand guy.
I'm surprised that you eat movie popcorn after working there.
Well, movie theater butter popcorn is not. Sorry, I mean the brand movie theater butter.
I see.
I actually. If somebody else buys popcorn, I will eat their popcorn at a movie theater, but I will never pay for popcorn again after working in a concession stand.
Like, fair enough.
I have to. It's just a thing I need to do while I watch a movie in a theater. I just need to shovel things in my mouth.
I don't know if you're joking, but that really helps calm me down and focus on the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Orville
really
Redenbacher,
does.
Mr. T.
The
George
Mr. T.
H. W. Bush.
Yes. Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. I got to pull my hair back. Jack.
Oh, you should have been an 80s stand-up.
But yeah, what does the council have to say?
We got it!
Take it easy, Mo. Let's hear from the Stonecutter World Council before we act too rashly.
Kill him.
Kill him.
Kill the fool.
Afraid I have to disagree with Orville, Jack, and Mister. Can't we just do something to his voice box?
We might as well face the truth. As long as we're Stonecutters, he will control our lives.
Maybe. But maybe we don't want to be Stonecutters no more.
Much better than Stonecutter Hall.
Silence. I now call to order the first meeting of the Ancient Mystic Society of No Homers.
Yay!
Hey, fellas, can I join?
Sorry. No Homers.
Yeah, they take over a Baskin-Robbins for their new secret hideout.
To make it vacant store.
Yes.
Mo, he really is the MVP of this episode. That he's the one who says, maybe we don't want to be Stonecutters.
He has all the best ideas.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Barney, another classic Barney in the mix of...
The thing about maybe doing...
Of course Barney is a Stonecutter.
Yes.
The thing Bush has about maybe doing something to his voice box, I'm thinking of how Bush was in the CIA, and that's something he probably would think of. of.
That seems too deliberate of a reference. I don't understand what that
I
means.
I wondered if it was a late change. I wonder if he agreed to kill him, and then they're like, no, this is too far. We can't say that a former living president would want to murder Homer.
That probably would have caused some controversy in 1995.
It might have, yeah. In 95, he was still, well, he definitely wasn't liked even by George Bush's, as Sideshow Bob put
in it. Laser Time, an episode about the finest musical moments of Freddy Krueger, people pitched a fit because Freddy Krueger threatened to kill a George Bush puppet on DC Follies.
Wow.
And it implied he was going to murder him.
Jeez,
not my president.
Puppet.
A puppet. He was held back by Fred Willard.
Did he mention 1,000 points of fright, perhaps? Anybody?
I got it. Okay. It just,
1,000 points of light.
Yep.
The moral of this episode is that everyone seeks authoritarian rule. We crave it. Everybody, not just everybody in Springfield.
To rule you like a king.
Yes. I like to imagine that, meanwhile, in every Stonecutter Hall around America, that they were abandoned and filled with Civil War monkeys. I want to imagine it was a national thing.
Probably the monkeys that Mr. Burns was using previously to write the book.
Oh, that's right. Homer freed them from their servitude.
Yeah.
Civil War monkeys instead.
And I like that Marge is saying that they will give each other parasites. That Homer might give them parasites just as...
She identifies them as Colobus monkeys. I looked up Colobus monkeys. They look nothing like the monkeys in this animation.
Well, it's at least it's more specific than just saying monkey.
Cute that Marge identifies the specific kind of monkey, though.
Yeah, I wonder if that's as a comedy writer saying, like, it's funny to say monkey, but we be more specific.
Yeah.
More specific is funny. Bart and Lisa in their rings is one of my favorite animation moments in this whole episode.
Yes.
I love it so much.
By the way, Jim Reardon directed this episode. Great job.
Yes, superstar.
You know, you are a member of a very exclusive club.
The Black Panthers?
No, the Family Simpson, which has just 5 members, and only 2 of those members have special rings.
Yeah!
I meant our wedding rings!
You know, Marge, you're right. The Simpson family is the best possible club I could belong to.
Oh! Oh! Ah! 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 This club better be worth it.
All right. It's Lisa's turn.
Great ending.
Homer's pose there is the Kevin Bacon pose when he is getting spanked in Animal House, which he already was in that pose at the end credit sequence of Homer Goes to College, by the way, except in that one he was nude.
Okay.
Upon this viewing, I lost my shit at the kids blowing in the rings. Yes. That was so fucking funny.
It'll
be funny forever.
How frustrated Marge gets. She's trying to talk to Homer and talk him down, and they just interrupt with this annoying whistle sound.
You had one of those whistles, I didn't have one on a ring, but you can suck it back in and slow it down.
I love their disappointment. Like,
it's a great pose. It's an awesome pose.
The only slight criticism I have of this episode is that the final, I suppose, moral or the speech that Marge gives is a little schmaltzy, but it's made up for by the final joke at the end.
Yeah,
so.
They needed a Padlint undercut. It is very rare they end a show on the sweetness instead of a joke. The next episode is the rare time they don't end on a joke. And they're afraid to get too cute. They're like, all right, we've been cute enough. Time to smack Homer in the butt.
Yeah, next show has one of the most poignant moments. Yes. I think they earned it for sure.
Oh, it's for real. Though, Kat, I did want to know, you had a list of major Simpsons characters who are not members of the Stonecutters. And so many, like Jasper's in there. We don't really talk about it. Krusty is in there. Smithers is in there, even though they don't have lines.
The guy without an arm is in there.
Herman.
Yeah, Herman.
Herman is
in
there.
But did you say you took a list of who's not in there?
Yeah, I was like, who is not in there? So here are just a few. One is Ned Flanders.
That makes so much sense, though.
It's too godless for him, I'd say.
Ned Flanders not in it. Reverend Lovejoy.
Ah, no heathen shit for them.
Apu.
Praises, sure.
Snake.
Well,
he's probably too busy being in prison.
I was locked in jail.
Well, he's low class, also. I don't think
Otto is definitely not a stonecutter.
No.
Too young.
And Lionel Hutz, surprisingly, is not a stonecutter.
He's too inept.
Okay.
I don't think you would know about stonecutting.
I never noticed those dudes were not there. It's so they kind of used every.
Every model. I think that it's funny that Dr. Hibbert is second in command.
That's true. His hat shows he is number 2, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that shows you, too, just how full Springfield is getting with known characters. That that they can have everybody be a known character instead of just have to make up dudes.
Years ago, they would have just had a whole bunch of generic characters and like the random babysitter that they reused a whole bunch of times.
And also, most of them would have hair over their eyes, so they wouldn't have to draw eyeballs. Like, God, that is a great, great episode. It's
an all-timer.
It's
it
an
really
all-timer.
Is.
Great from beginning to end. The jokes about just all the shit you get from being in a secret society is great. And then Homer... Homer is awesome throughout all of this too.
Yeah, all the jokes land except for the Steve Guttenberg one, but I'll forgive them for that because this is a great episode.
And they sing it, so it's easier to forgive.
I'm A-plussing this up.
Mm-hmm. It's such an A-plus episode, and I think that everybody can identify with the frustration of not being into the club, even if you were the popular kid. Yeah. At some point, you were probably left out, so you can totally identify with what Homer's going through. And let's be honest. The No Homers Club joke is just, it's a classic. There's so many classic gags in this
launched
one.
A thousand shitposts.
Yes, of course.
Have you been in any game events recently, Ken?
Any game events?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. Why do you ask?
I was going to say, well, did you see me there? That's how I feel every day. Every single day. I'm not at the place where all my friends are at.
The No Antistas Club. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for
the
listening,
games
folks.
Industry.
Oh, well, who needs it, I say. Thanks for listening, folks. I've been your host, Bob Mack. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts every Monday at Retronauts.com. Or look for Retronauts in your podcast device. That's a classic gaming podcast. We've been going on for 11 years. So if you haven't heard of us, what's your problem? That's my question for you, the listener.
How'd you get this far?
Yes, exactly. You should know who I am. Anybody else, jump in.
Hi, I'm Cat Bailey, and you can find me on Twitter at @_CatBot. And by the way, if you like me podcasting about things and being nerdy, you should listen to my RPG podcast, Acts of the Blood God, where I get very, very nerdy about role-playing games alongside my co-host, Nadia Oxford, right in the middle of a deep dive episode by episode of Final Fantasy IX. So think of that as the Talking Simpsons of JRPGs.
I'm HENERYG on Twitter, and you can follow me there for any updates when new episodes go live. Also, if you heard this with ads, well, did you know you could hear it without ads and a week early? That's right. It's on patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons along with the first season of the show, every episode of Talking Critic, 3 exclusive interviews, 4 exclusive videos, and our monthly community podcast and tons more stuff coming after that.
Well, you got it all in one breath. That's impressive.
Just starting at $5 a month gets you all of those things. It's totally worth it if you like this podcast, and it helps me and Bob live. This is our main full-time job.
Chris.
Yeah, well, if you like Patreons, you'll love patreon.com/lasertime. It's hard to make a better pitch than that. But for free, for nothing, you can go to lasertimepodcast.com or check out our other fine shows. Anywhere you listen to your podcast, 30, 20, 10, looking back 30, 20, and 10 years ago, and that week in history, usually pop culture history. Laser Time, the topic-based show. We just recently did a show about the origins of Rick and Morty and South Park and the finest musical moments of Freddy Krueger in honor of Halloween. And we also have a limited series, An Elm Street Nightmare, every single Tuesday. Me and Lizzie Cuevas talking about every single thing Freddy Krueger has ever done in 8 short episodes.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with And Maggie Makes 3, and we'll see you then.
Who controls the British crown? Who keeps the metric system down? We do. We do. Atlantis off the maps. Who keeps the Martians under wraps? We do, we do. Who holds back the electric car? Who makes Steve Guttenberg a star? We do, we do. Who robs gay fish of their sight? Who rigs every Oscar night? We do.
Shut up.